Hello, everybody. My name is Andy Fernandez.
And my name's Michael Fernandez.
And welcome back to another episode of What Makes It Great. Today, we are in 1957, talking about David Lean's The Bridge on the River Kwai, ranked number 13 on the original list and number 36 on the 10th anniversary update.
We're still in 57.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's been a long decade.
And there's four more to go after this?
I think so, yeah. Sad. Yes. The Bridge on the River Kwai. I had seen this once before when I was in high school. I checked this out from the public library. I remember liking it, but I haven't seen it since. So it's been probably about 14, 15 years for me.
Yep, same. I think I watched it that one time, but kind of not really paying attention and just wanting to hear the whistle.
Yeah, that's the only thing I remembered about it.
Same.
The famous whistle song.
But if I had to rename this movie, I would call it Stockholm Syndrome with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Not the bridge over the River Kwai.
No. That's also, what is up with that whole thing?
I think that was the name of the book.
Oh, okay. Because whenever I was searching it, that kept on being one of the suggestions. I was like, no, on the river, not mm-hmm. over.
Yeah.
Okay. I watched it on Amazon, but it was through mm-hmm. IMDb.
TV or whatever, so yeah. It's free with ads.
It had ads, and mm-hmm. that... Is that how you watched it?
Yeah, that's how I watched it. So it broke up, had a couple of commercial breaks, so it felt like I was watching it on TV.
Yeah, it felt like I was watching it on TV. It felt way longer, and it was kind of hard for me to engage, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah. I liked it. I remember liking it the first time, and I liked it this time.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a new director to talk about, David Lean.
Oh, Lean?
Lean, yes. Okay. As in, like, come on, Eileen.
Gotcha.
He's one of the most famous influential directors of all time. He's a British director. He's known for directing epic movies like The Bridge on the River Kwai, another movie on the list, Dr. Zhivago.
Oh, cool.
And another movie on the list, Lawrence of Arabia.
Ah.
He's known especially for his eye for camera shots and editing techniques, and he's really a big influence on Steven Spielberg and a lot of other directors, but Spielberg in particular. Really, really appreciates him as especially Lawrence of Arabia. Him and Martin Scorsese personally were involved in the restoration of Lawrence of Arabia that happened.
Oh, Spielberg and Scorsese?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, in a similar way that Christopher Nolan was recently involved in the restoration of 2001 A Space Odyssey. I think they kind of spearheaded the Lawrence one. He gets nominated for 11 Academy Awards during his career. He gets director and writer for a movie called Brief Encounter in 1947, director and writer for Great Expectations in 1948, director for Summertime in 1956, director for Dr. Zhivago in 66, director, writer, and editor for A Passage to India in 1985. But he only wins two, director for Bridge on the River Kwai and director for Lawrence of Arabia.
Wow.
So three of his movies appear on the AFI's list, and that's this one, Dr. Zhivago and Lawrence of Arabia. Seven of his movies appear on the British Film Institute's list of the top 100 British films of all time. Those are ranked. There's a movie called In Which We Serve at number 92, Oliver Twist at number 46, Dr. Zhivago at 27. This movie is number 11, Great Expectations number 5, Lawrence of Arabia number 3, and his movie Brief Encounter is the second best British film of all time, according to the British Film Institute.
Wow.
So he is quite well regarded, one of the greatest British directors of all time, and one of the most influential directors of all time as well.
Wow. All right, Mr. Lean.
Yeah, this is our first exposure to him on the list, so it's cool. And there are some moments of camera shots and editing that we kind of see here. I think it's much more prominent in Lawrence of Arabia, but there's a lot of that going on here too.
Mm-hmm.
Two actors I want to talk about. Alec Guinness.
Yay, Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
But doesn't like that.
Yeah, he doesn't like that. So, British actor. He works extensively with director David Lean. He appears in six of his movies.
Wow.
Including all of his movies that appear on this list.
Wow.
He's also appears in the original Star Wars trilogy as Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's knighted by the Queen of England. He was mainly known for comedies prior to this movie. And his character is not comedic at all.
No.
And there were times when they were shooting this movie that he was trying to inject some humor and levity into his character, and the director kept having to be like, no, your character is boring. Your character is just plays it straight. He's not a funny person. If you put comedy into him, it will ruin the character. And
then probably right, yeah.
Yeah, he showed him some test screenings, and he never bothered him again about it. He was very, very, he liked this role a lot.
Hmm.
He wins an Academy Award for this movie, and he gets nominated 3 other times. Once for writing a movie that he, a comedy that he wrote, and twice for acting. One of those acting nominations is for Obi-Wan Kenobi, the first Star Wars movie.
Wow, cool.
And then I did want to briefly mention another actor, Sesue Hayakawa.
That's Saito.
Yeah, that is Saito. That's the main villain of this movie. He was one of the earliest non-white stars of Hollywood. He got his big break in a silent movie in 1915.
Cool.
The year that Birth of a Nation came out, I think.
Cool.
And he really rose to prominence in that silent era. He was playing a lot of really stereotypical, kind of evil, seductive Asian villains. And he was one of the earliest sex symbols in Hollywood.
What?
Yeah, he had a really long career. He ultimately got an Oscar nomination for this movie.
Glad you said career. You said sex symbol, and then yes, he had a really long career.
Yes.
That's why.
So he's really cool. I think at one time he was a producer and he was producing his own stuff, and so really, really notable, really, really well respected in the world of Asian cinema for being one of the pioneers and one of the people that kind of broke through.
Cool.
So I thought that was kind of cool. And just a couple of notes about the movie. It is shot on location in Sri Lanka.
Hmm.
And the two writers of this movie were blacklisted. And so the credits of the version we watched list their names. The original version does not list their names in the credits. It lists the author of the original novel who actually couldn't speak English.
Huh.
And this movie wins for best adapted screenplay, and they give it to the guy, the author of the book, who did not write the screenplay. Hmm. And it wasn't until years later, when one of the writers had already died, and then the other one only lived 1 year afterwards, but the Academy corrected it and awarded them the Oscars.
Hmm.
So that's sad, but ultimately corrected, but maybe a little too late.
Were they blacklisted because they were commies?
Yes. Yes, this is during that era of Hollywood.
Oh my gosh.
That's what I got before we talk about the movie.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Okay.
The first shot.
First shot. It's another color movie.
Uh-huh.
I think that's pretty much the standard from here on out.
Yay.
There's some sort of...
Bird. Yeah, just flying up. I don't know if it's a vulture. I don't know what it is.
Or an eagle. Yeah, I don't know. And it happens again at the end.
Yeah, it bookends the movie with this bird.
Don't know what it means.
Nope, me neither.
I was like, if it's an eagle, maybe it represents America, but it's about British soldiers. Granted, there is one American soldier in it, William Holden,
mm-hmm.
who we saw in Sunset Boulevard.
Is he the main guy in Sunset Boulevard?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I recognize him.
The voice especially.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know what this bird means.
Hold on, was Sunset Boulevard this decade?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I think
God,
that was the first movie we talked about this decade. Came out in 1950.
Yikes. Okay.
But yes, we get some lush jungle air, kind of this lush jungle. We hear a monkey and birds and insects as the camera's kind of panning through the jungle and the credits are rolling. We see a train track through the jungle with some grave markers along the side, setting the tone of this construction of this train that is costing a lot of lives. And we hear a train whistle blowing. Train rushes past. There's a soldier on top of it with a machine gun. The train reaches the end of the tracks where some soldiers / prisoners are working to like tear up the earth and build the tracks for this railroad. And there's a really bombastic score playing during this thing. So this is basically going to be the movie. I like how this opening sets the tone for how dangerous this job is,
mm-hmm.
how much suffering goes into this, and just kind of the weight of the situation that these soldiers are in. Mm-hmm. We see Colonel Nicholson, that is Alec Guinness. He's leading the new prisoners marching back to the camp. We see William Holden's character, Shears, and another prisoner. They're digging graves, and they ask for a break. He gives a lighter to one of the Japanese guards, and he gets put on the sick list to take a break.
Yeah, he bribes him.
Yeah, he bribes him with a lighter. And before they do, though, Shears delivers a eulogy to the soldier they just buried, and he's like, doesn't remember who he is, and not doesn't know why he died. He's really kind of sounds like really uncaring, mm-hmm. but it's just because he's done it so many times. Mm-hmm. He's just seen so much death, it doesn't have as much of an impact on him anymore. I think it's just a survival technique that he has to have. Mm-hmm. We also meet Colonel Saito, Sesue Hayakawa. He is in his hut, and he hears some whistling, and he looks out to see Colonel Nicholson and his new prisoners whistling while marching and presenting themselves to Colonel Saito, and that is Colonel Bogey's March is the name of the song they're whistling.
Oh, really?
And you will recognize it immediately when you hear it.
Yes. And it's very, very catchy. It gets stuck in your head. Mm-hmm. Love the whistle, but I think it's really... I mean, I don't ever remember it from this because I only saw this once when I was younger. I remember it from Spaceballs, isn't it? In Spaceballs?
Yes. Dink, dink.
That's right, where the Jawa-like people are whistling.
Dink, dinks.
Which is funny because that's making fun of Star Wars, and then Alec Guinness is in Star Wars, yeah. and Alec Guinness is in Bridge in the River Kwai, and it's, it all comes around.
It all comes around, exactly. And honestly, that's probably the most famous thing in the movie.
Yeah.
Is this whistling.
And maybe like one shot at the very end, whenever.
Sure. Right. And I just think it's funny that kind of just is this thing. Shears is watching them file in, and he says something like, we're going to be a busy pair of grave diggers to his partner there. And then Saito comes out and announces that this is Camp 16 and he is in charge, and they are to build a railroad connecting Bangkok to Rangoon. They have to build a bridge over the River Kwai. Escape is impossible. They're on an island in the jungle. There's no watchtower. There's no barbed wire because they don't need it. And so he sets the stage for their dire situation.
Everyone will be working.
Mm-hmm. Even the officers.
And Alec Guinness knows like that.
Yeah. Nicholson goes up to Saito and he reminds him that the Geneva Convention forbids the use of officers for manual labor, and he just gets dismissed. He doesn't pay any attention to him. Mm-hmm. We see, we hear some thunderclap, and then there's pouring rain, and Nicholson meets with Shears, who tells him that he is basically the only one left from those that built the camp. Mm-hmm. Everyone else has died from various diseases, overwork, ending their own lives.
Yeah.
And Nicholson says, Saito seems reasonable, though, and Shears just kind of laughs at him at how his naivete, his ignorance mm-hmm. at the situation. So Shears has kind of been beaten down by the reality of what's going on. He's very pessimistic, mm-hmm. and Nicholson is very by the book and traditional and law and order kind of guy. And so...
he's adamant he won't let any of his officers do any work. He's trying to negotiate with Saito, saying, like, hey, we're prisoners of war, but, like, you know, we can do all of the disciplining of our own men. We'll do what you guys need us to do and want us to do, but, like, mm-hmm. you know, use our officers and follow the Geneva Convention and let's make this civilized and work together while you guys are imprisoning us.
Right.
And Saito's like, no.
He's like, no, y'all are prisoners, and I'm gonna do with you whatever I need to do. Like, yeah. I'm going to do this.
I don't think you get this. Yeah. I won. I'm the warden. You are in jail.
You don't get to make the demands here.
Yeah.
He thinks that there's Nicholson thinks he's supposed to play by the rules, basically.
Mm-hmm. He's like, show me the papers and the Geneva Convention, and then the next day he like tries to show him when he tries to make the officers work again. He's like, remember, look what I got. And he's like, you know what I got? I got a sweat box for you.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah.
Where is that part of the movie? Oh yeah, he says that the bridge needs to be done by May the 12th, and I think it's like January, February or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's a couple months away. All the men will work, including the officers, and you're underneath this Japanese engineer, and he orders the soldiers to collect their tools. One of the soldiers kind of breaks ranks, and Nicholson calls him back. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, get back in line. And Nicholson goes to talk to Saito about the Geneva Convention.
I must call your attention, Colonel Saito, to Article 27 of the Geneva Convention. Belligerents may employ as workmen prisoners of war who are physically fit other than officers...
The major book.
And by all means. You read English, I take it.
Do you read Japanese?
I'm sorry, no. But if it's a matter of precise translation, I'm sure that can be arranged. You see, the code specifically states that the...
And he, like, gets backhanded across the face, and he's bleeding from his mouth.
That's right.
And he actually got hit. The Sesue, the actor, actually hit Alec Guinness on accident and actually caused him to bleed.
Well, it makes it real.
Yeah. And Alec Guinness stayed in character, to his credit. Whenever he gets backhanded, some soldiers kind of jump forward, and Nicholson just, like, orders them back in line really quick.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, Saito orders them to work, and no one moves. And then Nicholson orders it, and they all march out to work, except the officers.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts to set up this dynamic where Saito's not really in control. It's Nicholson that's in control. And Saito's desperately trying to get control of Nicholson, and Nicholson won't give in.
Yeah, and then he makes all the officers stand out in the sun for a long-ass time.
Mm-hmm.
They're just standing there. And then whenever that's ending, that's when he puts them in the sweat box, right? Like this little box he has to sit in the sun, just like sweat.
Yeah. He tells him to order the officers to work, and he refuses. And they like pull out a machine gun on this truck. And he's like, I'm going to count to three. And then he gets to two, and one of the soldiers from the hospital, the doctor guy, he comes out and he's like, there's too many witnesses. This is not going to go well for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so he leaves him outside. And then afterwards, Saito comes out and he's like, he tells Nicholson to order the officers to go to the punishment hut. but Nicholson stays behind, and you see him go into Saito's hut, and there's a bunch of soldiers like yelling, leave him alone. And then he gets dragged out and put into the oven.
That's what it is, the oven, yeah.
Yeah, so he gets beat up off camera and then dragged into this metal box that's in the middle, like in the baking hot sun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tiny. He's really, really cramped close to the ground where you can almost sit up fully, but not even then.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just the worst form of torture, probably, that you can be in the humid jungle. And
he's got the force, though, it's okay.
Yeah, and all the soldiers around him are chanting or singing that "For He's a Jolly Good Fellow" song.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, there was a scene I think that we skipped over with there was a scene where the officers were like had a meeting or something.
Oh, yeah, and they talk about escaping.
Yeah, Nicholson kind of shuts down some escape plans. Like, don't escape because we were ordered to surrender. So there's this kind of idea that maybe escape might be against orders.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, might be breaking military law. And he's like, we need to be civilized. And Shears is like, we're not a part of civilization. And he's like, well, then it's our job to introduce it. So, again, it kind of talks about the conflicting perspectives of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the more interesting parts of this movie.
What is it? What war is this during, do you know?
World War II.
It's World War II, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is taking place in the 1940s. I think it's like 43 or something like that.
Hmm.
The reason I wanted to bring that up is because after we see Nicholson getting put into the oven, we then cut to some escaping soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Some soldiers do try to escape, and a bunch of them are getting shot. One of them falls into the river after being shot, and apparently that was Shears. I couldn't really tell in the scene. It was kind of quick or something, but that was Shears, and everyone says that apparently he's dead, but he shows up later.
Yeah, I was like,
he survives.
Is that? Yeah.
We do see some men working on the bridge. Nicholson's been in the oven for at least 3 days, according to some dialogue, which is unbelievable, I think. massive heat stroke happening to him, probably, in dehydration. They're way behind schedule on this bridge, and so Saito gives one of the soldiers 5 minutes to go talk to Nicholson to tell him to get the officers on board with building the bridge, or Saito will order the hospital to shut down and for all of the patients to work. This soldier's name is Clipton. He goes in and he begs Nicholson to give in, but Nicholson kind of refuses on principle. And then Clipton tells Nicholson about Shears apparently dying. Then, like, Clipton kind of reports back to Saito, and he has this quote. He's like, are they both mad, or am I going mad? He's kind of the one that's in the middle. He's kind of the audience of the movie, basically. Of like, geez, these guys don't budge. They're really stubborn with their viewpoints. Like, this seems ridiculous how much they're kind of stuck on these little points. It's all about, like, you know, who feels right and how far do you take it and principles and morality and all of these things. And Clipton's just like, people are dying. What is going on?
I'm trying to be pragmatic.
Exactly. And so then we see Shears. He has survived.
He is running away.
Yeah, he's really struggling in the wilderness. He's being followed by vultures. And there's a kite that looks like a vulture that he freaks out about for a second.
At first, I was like, what is this really crappy CG? What is going on?
Like, so too.
Like, dumb special effect here. What is this?
I was like, and that's cheesy.
But yeah, and it's like fast cuts. But they do it like 2 or 3 times, and the third time it stops, and it's like, oh, that's an actual kite. Yeah. And then it pulls away, and there's like kids playing. And you're like, oh, there's a village over here. Oh, okay.
Yep, there's a village. They take him in, and implication being that they kind of treat him and heal him and get him healthy again. He's made it. He successfully escaped when it was supposedly impossible. There's just a village right down the river that everyone, if they just follow it, they're there. Saito's really frustrated the continued lack of progress. He addresses the prisoners, saying the delay is due to the officer's laziness, but he also blames his own engineer, saying he has removed him from his post and now Saito will be in charge of overseeing the construction of the bridge. And he like gives them as he's like, I have gifts for you. And it's like their own Red Cross parcels. That's what they said. I was like, I don't know what that means exactly. I guess it's just their own army supplies being given back to them.
Something like that. Care packages they were supposed to get or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And there's a little scene like at the construction site, part of the bridge falls down. We get it more explicitly later, but basically the soldiers are purposely working slowly and purposely kind of sabotaging parts of the project so that the bridge doesn't really get built or get finished, or if it does, it's not really stable. One night, they collect Nicholson and they bring him to Saito, and he invites him to join him for dinner. Nicholson refuses to eat or drink. Again, his principles. Saito stresses to him that he must obey his orders and have the bridge completed by May 12th, which is 12 weeks from now.
I must carry out my orders.
Oh, quite, quite.
My orders are to complete the bridge by the 12th day of May. Time is short. I have only 12 weeks more.
No doubt.
Therefore, I am compelled to use all available personnel.
Nicholson still refuses. He won't budge. And he's like, Saito's like, don't you understand? If this bridge doesn't get finished in time, I have to kill myself.
Yeah.
He's like, for my honor, I have to kill myself if I don't get this done. So
he's like, what would you do if you were me? And he's like, well, I'd probably kill myself.
Yeah.
Nudge, nudge.
So he's got all the pressure on him. Mm-hmm. And so Nicholson suggests that two of the British officers should be put in charge of the bridge. Saito kind of refuses. But again, we see some weaknesses. We see some cracks in Saito because he's got a lot on the line.
And they kind of get to a compromise, and they like, Nicholson ends up at the end of this conversation drinking some scotch or something like that. And he like, I don't know, gets close, gets buddy-buddy, like gets at least a rapport so they can, gets enough dirt on him so they can work together. And he can have some control of his troops, and they build the bridge pretty quick. Like, doesn't it fast forward after this, kind of?
A little bit, but there is probably one of my favorite scenes of the movie. They take Nicholson out of the oven, and the soldiers are all standing at attention. They salute him as he walks over to Saito's hut as proudly as he can muster. It's this kind of stumble walk. Alec Guinness said he based it on, I think, his son, who was recovering from polio.
Hmm.
He based that his walk on it, and it was one of his most famous moments of acting he ever did in his career.
Hmm.
Was him getting out of the oven. Saito announces that it is the anniversary of the Japanese victory over Russia, and in celebration of this,
I have given your troops a day of rest.
And he exits the hut, and the soldiers crowd him, Nicholson exits the hut, and the soldiers crowd him and cheer for his success as he goes over and releases the officers from the punishment hut and shakes their hands. And all the soldiers put Nicholson on his shoulders. He's won the victory over Saito, basically, of principles. And Saito is in his hut crying. It's one of my favorite moments of the movie. It's kind of, you're like rooting for Nicholson, but also he's so, again, ignorant of this situation.
Yeah.
Naive.
Mm-hmm.
But he won. It's still, you kind of want to cheer a little bit.
Yeah. Stupid victory, but yeah, it's a victory.
Yeah. And everyone's just having a ball. Meanwhile, back at the village, Shears has been nursed back to health, and they shove him off down the river. It kind of shows his journey a little bit. He gets really exhausted and thirsty and drinks some river water, and then he gets sick, and he kind of continues drifting along down the river. So he's trying to get back to his home.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, back to the bridge. The construction of the bridge is commencing. Again, Nicholson's overseeing it. It's making a lot of progress. And he tells his soldiers, stop the demonstration. Stop the, sabotaging the project. I want to build a proper bridge to show them what British ingenuity can do. And he comes up with like new proposed plans. He wants to start the bridge over from a better location. He wants to increase the work that's being done per day. He wants to push his soldiers even harder in this prison camp.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to get some of Saito's men included in the work. And it's like this dinner meeting that's happening. And Saito like doesn't even have a say. Nicholson is running this prison camp for him, basically.
Yeah, at least, yeah, he is.
It's so bizarre. There are like,
I don't know, he's goal oriented and he just won the philosophical battle and the ideological battle, and now he's like, okay, this is my place. And yeah, he almost tries to, well, he convinces himself after being in the oven, maybe he just went crazy in the oven, like he just forgets about it, I don't know, he blocks that out, but he's like, we're not in a prison camp, this is an opportunity to do something great and, you know, in honor of the queen, in the name of the queen and king, I don't know.
Yeah.
He's like, for jolly old England, and yeah, whips everybody into shape, and they go double time, everybody's working. But then doesn't it cut also to, like, where Shears is?
Yeah.
And isn't there some other, like, there's other runaways or something there? Like, what's going on in this town?
Yeah, he's made it to, like, a British village, and he's, like, making out and flirting with a British nurse on the beach. Apparently, this was something that the studio forced the director to put in because there were no white women in the movie. The studio forced them to add this scene, and the director's like, this is my least favorite scene in the whole movie.
Yeah, it makes sense.
There's a major approaches him. He wants information about the bridge, and so he meets with him the next morning after he leads like a training on plastic explosives, and they talk over a map and discuss the Japanese plans to build a railway into India. And they've come up with this plan where they intend to parachute in and blow up the bridge. And they want Shears to go with them to be their expert of the area and the bridge. And then we learn a little bit about Shears here. Basically, the U.S. Navy has given him over to the British Army. Because it's been revealed that Shears has been imitating an officer. He is not really an officer. But when his ship sank, he washed up on the shore and he basically assumed the identity of an officer that he found.
Hmm.
And he did that because he assumed that officers would be getting better treatment as a prisoner when he got captured.
Wrong.
He got captured by the wrong people. He did not get better treatment. And he kind of reveals this, and the British guy's like, yeah, we already knew that. And the U.S. government and the military already knew that. That's why they gave them you over to us, so that you're forced to go on this mission and so that they could save some embarrassment from what's going on here.
Oh, my gosh.
So he's stuck, and he has to go on this mission to try to blow up the bridge, even though his whole goal is to been trying to get back home, get out of this war. He hates it. He doesn't want to die. He's been trying to get, like, medical leave and come up with all kinds of excuses to try to get out of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Back at the bridge, Clipton challenges Nicholson, saying that them building the bridge could be construed as treason.
Yep.
And Nicholson's like, but look, discipline has improved, morale is high, the men are being fed and they're no longer abused. Like, I'm helping. Like, he's like, but you're also helping the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Willingly. You're, like, improving their efficiency and everything.
Yeah.
So, again, Clipton is the audience, I think. He's like, don't you see what you're doing?
Idiot.
But Nicholson's got real bad blinders.
Mm-hmm. He's Stockholm, man.
Yeah. Stockholm Kenobi. Yes. The British create their team of Shears. There's a Canadian soldier named Joyce, a major named Warden, who's the explosive expert, and one other person, I forget who. Because it doesn't matter, because as soon as they parachute in, one guy lands in some trees and dies, and that's the guy who I don't remember who it was.
Yeah, I don't remember him.
So they're hacking their way through the jungle. They're accompanied by some villagers that are helping them, like, with their supplies and kind of helping to guide them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was funny because, like, all the men, the male soldiers are all getting tired, and the women villagers are, like, just doo-doo-doo carrying all their supplies, like...
Hiking through the jungle, carrying all the supplies, yeah.
What's wrong, totally fine. Guys?
Yeah.
They go through some water and get leeches, and that always creeps me out in scenes like that in the movie, whenever those bugs, and they have to, like, cut them off or burn them off, and all... Ugh. Those are disgusting creatures. Anyway. Just nightmare fuel. Nicholson's back in the camp. He's getting some of the sick and injured to work on the bridge as Saito looks on. So the thing that Saito was threatening, that he would shut down the hospital and get them to work, force them to work, now Nicholson is doing it on his own.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but it doesn't, I don't know. This. He's slipping into evil that he doesn't even see.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting. How you can just slip into it and not notice. I think that says a lot about nowadays and people's beliefs.
Yeah.
That before you know it, you're advocating for a lot of terrible things. And maybe it's just little slips here and there that maybe make sense because morale is high and efficiency is blah, 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 or whatever it is.
Yep.
But
3 days in the oven, we'll do that to you. A year in quarantine, we'll do that to some people.
On their way to the bridge, Shears and the men are bathing at a waterfall. One of the women runs into a Japanese patrol and screams. And Shears and the men throw a grenade and fire down at them from above. There's a really kind of striking shot of the dead Japanese in the water with blood flowing in the water.
Mm-hmm.
They spread out to see if there are any other Japanese soldiers remaining, and Warden saves Joyce by killing a Japanese soldier that Joyce kind of freezes in front of.
So he, like, hurt his foot or something?
Yeah, he gets shot in the foot, he wounds his foot somehow, and so he tries to walk on it for some time, but he can't after a little while. He gets asked to be left behind, and Shears says,
I won't obey that order. You make me sick with your heroics. There's a stench of death about you. You carry it in your pack like the plague. Explosives and L pills, they go well together, don't they? And with you, it's just one thing or the other. Destroy a bridge or destroy yourself. This is just a game, this war. You and that Colonel Nicholson, you're two of a kind. Crazy with courage. For what? How to die like a gentleman. How to die by the rules. When the only important thing is how to live like a human being.
I really like that. I don't know exactly what it means, but... or what he means by it. what living like a human being means. I get dying by the rules, but living like a human being, I guess that there's a lot more gray. There's, you just have to live, like to fight to live as opposed to being so ready and willing to die. I guess. I don't know.
Maybe like being free as a bird, like we saw at the beginning. And then,
maybe.
And juxtapose that with all the prisoners and then...
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be what that little bird means.
Could be. I like that theory. Shears is like, I'm not going to leave without you. So the women kind of load him up on a stretcher and he's carried the rest of the way.
He's pissed about it.
Yeah. They arrive at the nearly completed bridge and they begin scoping it out. From a high vantage point.
And they're like, look, those British officers are being made to work down there. But really, whenever you zoom in, it's just Nicholson and one other officer. And they're like hammering up a sign that says, this bridge was made by the British under Colonel Nicholson.
And he's so proud. The bridge is done.
And it looks interesting. It's a very unique bridge.
Yeah.
It's cool, though.
And, yeah, Shears, Warden, and Joyce make their plan to plant the explosives on the bridge at night, run the wire underwater, place the plunger on the opposite side of the river undercover. And I don't remember... I watched this movie, and I can't remember when it gets mentioned or when they get this information, but there's a train that is going to be arriving the next morning with all of these, like, Japanese military officials and government officials, and they're going to be the first to cross this newly constructed bridge. I don't remember how that's known, but somehow Shears and Warden and Joyce know this information, so they set up the explosives and then they're going to wait until this train is on the bridge before they blow it.
Yeah,
because they could blow it a lot earlier,
so much earlier,
but
a couple different times,
but they choose to hold off.
Yeah.
And then there's another really cool scene. Nicholson and Saito are kind of walking the bridge and admiring their work.
I had no idea it would turn out so well. Yes. A beautiful creation. I've been thinking. Tomorrow it will be 28 years to the day that I've been in the service. 28 years in peace and war. I don't suppose I've been at home more than 10 months in all that time. Still, it's been a good life.
He thinks it's like all come full circle. Like this is his crowning achievement of his 28 years as a British officer. But he will have his shock back to reality moment.
Yeah, a little bit later.
A little bit later.
They have the whole little ceremony thing. That's what you're talking about, the ceremony at night?
Yeah, back at the camp.
Yeah, where they're celebrating the completion of the bridge and stuff, and there's like a drag show.
Yeah, they're dancing in front of, on a stage.
Yeah, in front of the Japanese soldiers, and then the bridge is in the background of it, and that's when they're setting up the bombs, and they're swimming around and being sneaky, and then, yeah, they get it all set up and everything, and they're like, okay, you sleep on this side where the enemy is, and you've got the plunger, and... get ready, and you know you're gonna set off the explosive right when the train gets there, and you're gonna be by yourself. Here's a gun. We're gonna be right across the water on the other side, in case you need anything, whatever. Got the wire all buried and everything, and then in the morning, like the water's going crazy at this time, so they've got some cover, so like they're not heard when they're swimming around, and but then in the morning, the water's all still and it's not racing, and part of the wire's like up.
Yeah,
out of the water. And
yeah, the river's gone down.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, crap, the wire's showing.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to see it. The whole plan's going to be ruined.
Mm-hmm.
And
the British troops go over first. Like, the prisoners go over the bridge.
Yeah, they're doing their whistle again.
Yeah, one last whistle here before the finale.
Yeah, they cut a ribbon on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all waiting for the train to arrive to cross the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Nicholson's like, should be here in about 10 minutes. Clipton goes, I don't want to watch from the bridge with the rest. I'm going to go up this hill and like watch from above.
Yeah,
good decision, Clipton.
Smart. I'm going to have this mortar with me, though.
Nicholson hears the train whistle, and Joyce is preparing the plunger. Warden prepares his mortar to defend just in case. Nicholson looks over the side of the bridge, and he notices something in the water. It's the wire, but he's not quite sure what it is, so... This is a great scene of building tension. You hear the train whistle in the distance. Nicholson, he doesn't run. No. He, like, slowly, he's like...
looking over the edge of it, and...
It's all facial expressions and slow, thoughtful movements that are really just perfect acting.
And cut back to, like, the... whatchamacallit, it's the guys in the binoculars. Ooh, really quick. Uh-huh. Whenever what's-his-face, his foot's hurt.
Warden.
I think he's, like, laying in the jungle... Maybe it's after this. No, it can't be. Like, laying in the jungle and he's, like, crawling and he thinks he's going to die. Or maybe that's way earlier.
Is that the scene where Shears is like, you and Nicholson are dying, but want to die by the rules, and why don't you just want to live like a human being?
Maybe, but he's in the jungle and he's about to die and he's, like, crawling, and then it looks like it's a fan effect with, like, lights, and there's, like, a shadow of a fan just going around, and then it keeps cutting to the sky, and there's tons of vultures flying overhead like they're about to die. But I remember, like, seeing it done, and I was like, they've probably got some sort of rotating, like, a fan, like, just blocking out the lights and stuff, but no, apparently it was birds. but, yeah, they've got that, like, that was just a cool shot that they had. But then there's this cool shots where it's, like, him looking over the bridge, like, his facial expression is close up, and then zoomed out, like, somebody's looking at him from the cliff and the trees, like they are, and then, yeah, the train, and then the guy with the plunger getting all scared, and he's trying to bury the wire, because the wire's up, like, right near him, and he's like, oh, shoot, I gotta bury this very discreetly, and then Obi-Wan goes, and he's like, hey, Saito, I think we need to check this out. Hold on. Let's go down to the bottom. And they go down to the bottom of the bridge, and they look, and they're like, yep, shit, that's a wire.
Yep.
It's a wire all the way over here. Like, we should pull this and follow this.
Joyce starts preparing his gun as they're getting closer and closer to him. And he's, you know, they pull on the wire. He begins following it to Joyce as the train's approaching.
And they're like, that bridge man's leading him straight to him. What is he doing? He's giving him away.
Joyce pulls his knife and quietly sneaks up on Saito and kills him. And Joyce tells Nicholson his mission. He's like, British soldier, we're British. We're trying to blow up the bridge. And, you know, it's like, you're British too, kind of thing. Like, we're on the same side. And then Nicholson begins yelling for help.
Yeah, and, like, tackling him and
he's like,
holding him away from the plunger.
He's trying to blow the bridge. We need help. And Shears and Warden yell for Joyce to kill Nicholson. Like, kill him.
And Shears starts swimming towards him, and then all these troops start coming off the bridge and all around, and they're, like, going straight towards the plunger and the bomb.
And then, boom, Joyce gets shot by some Japanese soldiers. And then Nicholson sees Shears coming up out of the water as he's trying to kill Nicholson and blast the bridge. And then Shears gets shot by some Japanese soldiers and then falls.
Keeps going, though.
Yeah, keeps going and then falls and dies at Nicholson's feet.
And Nicholson's like,
You!
Oh, no, what have I done?
Yeah, that's the moment. Boom, he gets snapped out of the daze he was in. What have I done?
He's like, oh, that's a prisoner at the beginning who told me not to escape, but then he did escape.
What have I done?
Warden, he's like, ah. And so he just starts firing mortars at the area there.
Almost hits Nicholson. He almost hits him.
Wounds him very badly, mortally.
Yeah.
He hits basically, and he's stumbling, he falls, he gets up, he kind of shakes the dust off, and like all properly kind of, but then he stumbles, and the train starts to cross the bridge, and then Nicholson falls down dead on the plunger, and boom, the bridge explodes, the train crashes down into the river, the general.
So much like the general, yes.
And it, again, real bridge, real train. They really blew it up.
Is it still there?
No, it's not still there. They tried it twice. The first time, it didn't blow, and the train kept going and crashed on the other side of the bridge.
Oh, gosh.
And they had to fix it and then get it, reset it, and then the second time was what is in the movie.
Man. Cool shot. Yeah, the explosion's awesome.
Very impressive, and as you can tell, very expensive shot.
Yes, I'm sure.
Clipton watches it all from his vantage point, and he says, madness. a callback to when he was talking about Nicholson and Saito. He's like, are they going mad? Are they both going mad, or am I going mad? And he's, you know, this whole situation's madness. Warden says he had to do that so they didn't get taken alive. And then he throws the mortar into the river and leaves with the women villagers that helped them get to the point, get to that place. And then Clipton gets down to the river and he says, madness, madness, again, as he kind of looks at the carnage. And the camera pulls away. I guess it's in a helicopter as the camera's kind of pulling away into the sky as there's like a march score that's being played as the sound of an army marching with some cheers. And then we go back to that image of the bird soaring in the sky. And that is the end of the bridge on the River Kwai.
Yeah, the end.
Yeah. It's quite the film. The reception of it, highest grossing movie of 1957. This is the year it came out. It was the movie, the most successful financially that year. Made $15 million
wow.
in the box office. It gets great reviews. It's nominated for 8 Academy Awards and wins 7 of them.
Dang.
The only one it does not win is Best Supporting Actor for Sesue Hayakawa.
Dumb.
Saito. He does not win. I don't know who beats him, but yeah, he was deserving. He was great in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It wins 7. Best Picture, Best Director for David Lean, Best Actor for Alec Guinness, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best Editing, and Best Score. The American Film Institute has it ranked number 13 and number 36 all time, number 58 Best Thrills, and number 14 on its Best Cheers list. And as I said before, the British Film Institute says it's the 11th best British film of all time. That's all I got on the movie.
Yeah, let's talk about what makes it great.
Yeah.
I want to go first, and I want to talk about, I think that bird's got to be, yeah, this symbol for freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts off, you know, free as a bird, flying around, going wherever it wants, and, you know, spiral down from that high ideological point or viewpoint, mm-hmm. and then goes into the prison camp, and that's where we spend
grave sites on the side of railroad tracks.
Yeah, and that's where we spend the whole meat of the story, and mm-hmm. you know, you're trapped there, and you go mad, and you start to you know, confuse which side you're on, and it's just no freedom, it's completely void of that, and everyone's fighting for it, and then finally at the end, and in the madness and the massacre and the explosions and everything, you know, you can fly away, and it goes back to the bird. Like, that's what there's no freedom in war, there's no, I don't know,
or maybe in death.
Or in death there is some freedom. I don't know. But this is a cool movie. The shots are great. The acting's great. The tension, I think, is what made this movie really enjoyable for me and what made it great for me.
What a great climax.
Great climax. And it seems kind of long. And some, I mean, mm-hmm. definitely felt long because there's ads we were watching.
Yeah.
But just, yeah, slowly kind of distorting like the viewpoints of each character, and I mean it was shot great. You said it was shot on location
in Sri Lanka. Yeah,
and that was neat. It looked really great. It had a lot of Apocalypse Now kind of vibes with mm-hmm. it being in a jungle and everything. And
David Lean almost died. He fell into the river and got sucked away. Like, very Apocalypse Now, how like people oh, wow. almost died making that movie.
Wow. But you know, it was good. The whistling was obviously great.
Yes.
Seeing Obi-Wan in something that wasn't Obi-Wan was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it was fun. I enjoy this movie. It's not like my favorite that we've watched, but it's a good one for sure. Mm-hmm.
For me, I'm a fan of Lawrence of Arabia, and this movie seems almost like a proto Lawrence of Arabia in a lot of ways. It's a long, epic movie about a big story, but when you boil it all down, it's really a small character film.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Lawrence is all about Lawrence and everything, but this one's all about Nicholson and Saito, really, and their conflict, their character conflict. And it's got some really complex, interesting character moments in a big war film that has an amazing action climax that is so well shot and edited to really ramp up the tension. And there's a lot of subtle, great acting that's done to ramp up the tension in that. It pays, but the reason why it's so effective is because they take their time in telling this small character story up until then that we actually care about the people that are involved in this climax.
For the most part, yeah.
I mean, I cared about Saito. I cared about Nicholson. I cared about Shears. I cared about Joyce even. I got mad. I was like, Nicholson, what are you doing? Like, you know, Shears is, no, you know, like, what is going, like, I was invested. That's what makes the movie great for me. It's a small character film kind of disguised in a big action epic.
Mm-hmm.
While it is slow at times, it is a little lengthy. I think the climax and the effective directing and cinematography and editing and acting in the climax especially kind of make up for it.
Yeah. Oh. I agree. It was a good one.
Yeah. It was a long one, though.
Yeah, it was.
So that is The Bridge on the River Kwai.
Yay. What are we talking about next time?
Well, let me tell you. We are going to 1958. One more year in the future. We are talking about our second Alfred Hitchcock movie.
Cool.
Vertigo.
Last Jimmy Stewart movie, right?
I think so.
Aww.
Yeah. It was ranked number 61 on the original list. And the 10th anniversary, it jumps all the way up to number 9.
Dang. Okay. Top 10.
Yeah, we got a top 10 movie next time. Alfred Hitchcock's Vertigo. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, share with your friends and family if you're enjoying the podcast. We really appreciate it. And my name is Andy Fernandez.
And my name is Michael Fernandez. Thank you guys for joining us on What Makes It Great.